Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. And today we're taking you back to the late 19th century and the story of the capture of Australia's most famous outlaw, Ned Kelly, who was executed in November 1880. Simon Watts reports.
It's the winter of 1880. In the middle of the night, John Stanistreet, the station master at the remote settlement of Glenrowan, is woken by a knock at the door.
I jumped up and I commenced to dress. When the door was burst in, I asked, "What's that for? Who are you?" The answer was, "I am Ned Kelly."
Stanistreet was face to face with Australia's most notorious outlaw.
I then saw a man clad in an overcoat standing in the doorway. He pushed me into my bedroom where my wife and some of the children were in bed. Then he said to me, "You have to come with me and take up the rails. There's a special train coming. You give no signals." Speaking to Hart, he said, "Watch his countenance, and if he gives any signals, shoot him."
The Kelly gang came from the wild, hilly country near Glenrowan. It was populated by immigrants struggling to make a new life in Australia. Kelly himself was from an Irish family with a history of petty crime. He took after his parents, says Professor Carl Bridge from King's College London.
His first crime as a 14-year-old is stealing from a Chinaman. Then his mother is arrested and she's jailed for 3 years. He then goes in search of the policeman who did it for revenge. There are all sorts of twists and turns to the tale, but essentially he runs off into the Wombat Ranges with two or three mates. It's really a teenage gang. And the police go looking for him. Kelly shoots three of the policemen, kills them dead. Once he's done that, he's in a different league. To survive, they start robbing stations and banks.
And he then becomes almost a folk figure in that part of Australia.
He does. You've got to remember that this area is an area of small landowners who are struggling, and he defies the odds. He attacks the bank. He burns their records. He breaks into a pub and makes the beer free for everybody in the town. So there's a sort of Robin Hood element to what he's doing. He's being daring and doing things that everyone else in his class would like to do but aren't quite game to.
Just give me an idea of the numbers. How many of people would there have been in his gang and how many police would have been after him, roughly?
Well, his gang, there are only four of his gang.
Only four?
Only four, although there were others outside who were aiding and abetting. So he was well and truly outnumbered.
And what was the role of Aboriginal trackers in all this? Ned Kelly seems to have particularly hated them.
What happened was that the police were coming up from Melbourne and couldn't find him. Bring in Aboriginal trackers from Queensland, who know the bush better than he does, and they find him in a flash. So then he has to have some sort of showdown. He goes into Glenrowan and thinks that somehow or other he can defy the police.
Ned Kelly's plan was epic. His gang forced the railway workers at Glenrowan to pull up the tracks because they knew a police train was on its way. The spot they picked was on the edge of a lethal precipice. The gang also brought metal armour to protect themselves in the event of a shootout, and they rounded up local people as hostages at the Glenrowan Hotel.
He was 16 years of age when he left his father's home, and through a strait, a sunny climb, a bush ranger did roam. He robbed those wealthy squatters, their stock he did destroy, and a terror to Australia was the wild colonial boy.
There was a long wait before the train was due. Hostages like the local teacher, Thomas Curnow, were entertained in typical Kelly gang style.
Dan Kelly, a short time after I entered the hotel, asked me to have a drink with him. And I drank with them at the bar. About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Ned and Dan Kelly caused several of their prisoners to engage in jumping, in the hop, step and jump. Ned Kelly joined in with them and used a revolver in each hand as weights.
But amid all the drinking games, Thomas Curnow was hatching a plan to warn the police. The teacher managed to gain Ned Kelly's confidence and he was allowed to go home, with a warning that the gang would check up on him now and then. Despite the risk of being spotted, Curnow then sneaked out to warn the train, using a red scarf and a candle as his danger signal.
I could not rest, and felt that I must perform what was clearly my duty. I heard the train coming in the distance as I was harnessing the horse, and I immediately caught up the candle, scarf and matches, and ran down the line to meet the train. I ran on until I got to where those in the train would be able to see the danger signal for some distance. I then lit the candle and held it behind the red scarf. I caught sight of the guard, who shouted, "What's the matter?" I yelled, "The Kellys!"
The police train pulled up just in time. Dozens of officers surrounded the hotel. They were accompanied by journalists from Melbourne, including the correspondent for the Australasian Sketcher.
The first brush was exceedingly hot. The police and gang blazed away at each other in the darkness furiously. There was nothing but a succession of flashes and reports, the pinging of bullets in the air, and the shrieks of the women who'd been made prisoners in the hotel. In a few minutes, Superintendent Hare returned to the railway station with a shattered wrist, but he gradually became so weak from loss of blood that he had to retire. On his departure, Sub-Inspector O'Connor and Senior Constable Kelly took charge and kept pelting away at the outlaws. Before daylight, Senior Constable Kelly found a revolving rifle and a cap lying in the bush about 100 yards from the hotel. The rifle was covered with blood.
The cap and rifle belonged to Ned Kelly himself. It seems that he was wounded while trying to escape and then decided to return to his friends. On his way back, the outlaw was spotted by a policeman called Sergeant Steele.
It was then breaking day. I looked round and saw a man stalking down. I thought he was a blackfella and called on the others to be careful. I then saw him present a revolver and fire at the police. I could see the bullets hitting him and staggering him for a moment with no further effect. I therefore thought he had armour on and determined to have a close shot at him. I ran towards him, and when within 10 yards of him he saw me and turned round to fire at me. I then aimed at his legs and he staggered. I then fired the second barrel. He fell and cried, "I'm done, I'm done." I ran up to him then and he tried to shoot me, but I caught the revolver and pushed it down. Senior Constable Kelly then came up and assisted me to secure him.
The police had their man, but the rest of the gang was still in the hotel. One of them was dead, but the other two fought on, even after releasing their hostages. Eventually, the police lost patience, as the Australasian Sketcher reported.
The best part of the day having elapsed, the police determined that a decisive step should be taken. At 3:10, another and last volley was fired into the hotel, and under cover of this volley, Senior Constable Charles Johnston ran up to the house with a bundle of straw, which, having set fire to, he placed on the ground at the west side of the building. This was a moment of intense excitement, and all hearts were relieved when Johnston was seen to regain, uninjured, the shelter which he had left. Not very many minutes elapsed, and smoke was seen coming out of the roof.
The bodies of the two remaining Kelly gang members were found inside. Ned Kelly himself was hanged a few months later. The outlaw days in southern Australia were virtually over, but Ned Kelly's story has lived on. He's become Australia's folk hero.
Oh, come all my hearties, we'll roll the mountains high. Together we will plunder, together we will die.
The elements there, the wild colonial boy elements, the defiance of authority, the humour, the devil-may-care element of him is essentially Australian. Whenever Australia gets into a fix and has to be self-reliant, the Kelly story comes out. The first movie ever made in Australia, the first silent movie, at the time of Federation, when Australia becomes a political nation, is about Ned Kelly. First movie. In 1942, when Singapore falls and Britain is no longer there as a protector, the play that's produced on the ABC that sums it all up is a play about Ned Kelly. Ned Kelly is a defiant hero. So we still need such a figure.
Witness was written and produced by Simon Watts. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.